We'll hear argument now in the case of Vinaroff against Motorola.
May it please the court. Good morning. My name is Gregory Adamski. I represent the appellant plaintiff below, Valerie Vinaroff. Your Honors, the parties both cite and distinguish cases that accept the proposition that unjust enrichment claims may be made in the face of a written contract. Examples of that are the Instalco case from the appellate court in the state of Illinois, the Swide case, and the Goodmanson case. They explicitly state the principle that an employee may seek compensation if the services provided are not reasonably related to the contract. The other cases, led by Murray versus ABT, say that where the contract specifically covers the activity, that they're barred. We respectfully suggest to you that this employment contract, to the extent that it is an employment contract, does not bar the activities that my client engaged in. It has the employment contract at issue does not contemplate anything about my client being involved in sales or marketing. My client was an engineer. In the 8 years he was employed by Motorola, he only did engineering duties. He had no sales responsibilities. He had no marketing responsibilities. He did this project on his own, and in fact, his immediate supervisor instructed him that he could not do this project on Motorola time. I respectfully suggest to you that there are at least three issues of material genuine fact. One is whether my client conferred value, and he did. The evidence of the record is that he did confer value by creating this plan, by putting together a plan itself, by a business plan that he submitted to Motorola, by supplying Motorola with his contacts. The record shows that Motorola, the second issue of genuine fact, is that Motorola accepted this and retained value from this. There's all kinds of materials in the summary judgment materials in tab U and tab V of the summary judgment motion that show that Motorola, after my client was terminated, that Motorola began a program that was substantially similar to the program that my client suggested, and that Motorola generated income as a result of that. And then finally,
they claim there wasn't any use of it. This thing never came to fruition, and there was no evidence in the record showing that it did. Is that wrong?
That is wrong, Your Honor. If you look at tabs U, tab U has the program itself, the 80-wise program itself. Tab V has a variety of exhibits showing press releases from Motorola, web documents relating to Radio Free Europe, press releases from Moscow showing that after 2003 that Motorola engaged in a program that a jury could conclude was based upon my client's Edelweiss program.
What tab are you referring to?
I would be referring to tab U and tab V of the summary judgment materials.
Is that something in your brief or something?
No, Your Honor.
Where is this, just in the record somewhere?
Yes. Yeah, it's in the summary judgment materials. The Rule 56 materials. And I'll give you some of the exhibits that are attached to it. Exhibit 273, 275, 276, 278. All of these exhibits and other exhibits that are referenced in those tabs show that Motorola engaged in a program in 2003, 4, and 5 that was similar to the program suggested by Edelweiss. Now, Motorola can say that it wasn't the Edelweiss program, but I think that we have the right to argue to a jury that it was the Edelweiss program. The final genuine issue of material fact is whether it's unjust not to compensate my client. And I think that it is unjust. My client did not, this employment contract does not contemplate my client do the things that he ended up doing here. And basically what my client did was he created a program for Motorola's use, gave up his contacts within the Russian government, and Motorola went ahead with a similar program. And based upon that record, I think that my client is entitled to unjust enrichment compensation from a fact finder. The case
well, this
is
idea,
that,
though, the, you say they accepted it and did other things. His contract was pretty broad, covered a lot of things, ideas and things that we may have come across. You're saying this is totally external, it had nothing to do with his work or anything else. He just
That's
thought
correct.
This up while at home or something or other.
That's
and
correct.
Mentioned to some people at work, thought it was a good idea, and that was the end of it as far as Motorola was concerned. You say they took that idea after he was terminated and ran with it. Huh?
That's exactly right. You know, if you look at the employment contract, Your Honor, the employment contract doesn't state a term. It doesn't state salary. It doesn't state a job description. It's really not, although it's called an employment contract, it's really not an employment contract. Instead,
you think it's
what it
too
is,
overbroad? Too inclusive?
The employment contract? No, but that's not the argument I'm making. The argument I'm making is that the employment contract is really an intellectual property contract. And my client was a professional engineer who they put in charge of hundreds of employees, and over the course of the 8 years, he was involved in a substantial development of Motorola's cellular telecommunications only from a technical point of view. And it's in that context that this contract was signed. My client had absolutely no prior experience with any kind of marketing, any kind of sales, not only at Motorola, but anywhere else. He had no experience with that at all. And out of the blue, he came, because of the fact that he's a Russian national, or a Russian native, and he knew people in Moscow, and he saw what was going on in Moscow, and saw that he thought that he could exploit that and put together this plan. And I suggest to you that nobody, when they signed this employment contract, that nobody contemplated in any way, shape, or form that this was going to fall under this. Now, the case law, I respectfully suggest that Judge Easterbrook's opinion in the Murray case, the case law basically says...
Make any difference who writes an opinion for the court.
Thank you.
Opinions speak for the court.
Thank you. The court in Murray and in the other cases, I think, all say, I think the jurisprudence here is unequivocal that if it's reasonably related to the agreement, then it falls under the agreement. If it's not reasonably related to the agreement, it doesn't. And if you look at the Swag case, in the Swag case, the owner of a company sold his company and signed, at the same time, signed an employment contract. And the employment contract was for sales and development. He then goes out. And,
you're in your rebuttal time, you know.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. During the period after he signs that agreement, the president of the company asks him to go and acquire another company. And he acquires the other company with the idea that he's going to be compensated. And the lower court said, yes, he has a right to present that to a fact finder. And if you have no further questions, I'd like to save some time for rebuttal.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Certainly, counsel. Mr. Finkel.
May it please the court, I'm Noah Finkel on behalf of defendant Appellee Motorola. Motorola believes the court should affirm the district court's judgment for one or both of two reasons. First, the employment agreement does control. Second, even if it doesn't, Vinaroff has not shown sufficient evidence that Motorola benefited from what he's called Project Edelweiss, much less unjustly so. First, I'd like to discuss the employment agreement. I think Mr. Damski has put it correctly. If the agreement between the parties is reasonably related to the subject matter of the unjust enrichment claim must fail. The agreement says, in consideration for his employment and salary and wages paid to me, it's not linked to a specific position that he had or job duties that he held. I understand and agree to assign to Motorola as this exclusive an entire right, title, and interest in all my inventions, innovations, or ideas.
I don't understand why you're emphasizing that. It's an intellectual property agreement. The problem here is not one of intellectual property. Right? The problem here is a straightforward one of corporate law, and a normal scholar of corporate law would just ask the question, was this a corporate opportunity? If so, it belonged to the corporation, and any compensation to the individual would have to be negotiated.
I don't disagree with that.
Why isn't that the question people have addressed and briefed? Since this case has nothing whatsoever to do with intellectual property, harping away on an intellectual property agreement doesn't help advance a resolution.
I believe it does. You could look at it that way as a pure corporate opportunity issue, but I do believe this is an intellectual property issue. It is, as Mr. Vinaroff would put it, an idea. It is an innovation. It is something that, in his employment, he signed away the right to Motorola. And importantly,
we would be living in a world of deconstruction a la Jacques Derrida if we talked about compensation to salesmen the same way we think about allocating rights and patents. It's not a path you want to go down.
There are provisions in the employment agreement about patents, as well as the broader, may call it sales, may call it corporate opportunity.
You know, he made a splendid argument for you. Why are you fighting?
Oh, no. Well, I believe there are two reasons. I don't disagree at all with Judge Easterbrook. But I do believe that the employment agreement squarely addresses this. And I think, you know, one of the important things to do is that this is something that does relate to the actual or anticipated business activities of Motorola. Motorola is a global telecommunications firm. This was a telecommunications opportunity in Russia. It occurred during the term of Mr. Vinaroff's employment, and thus it is Motorola's, and a claim for unjust enrichment cannot lie. I'd also like to address a few of the attempted distinctions that Mr. Damski attempted to make, which is that, first of all, he claims that this is an intellectual property agreement, and to the extent, and not an employment contract. And to the extent that he is correct, that's a distinction without a difference. Indeed, this is a piece of intellectual property that Vinaroff did sign over to Motorola. So whether one calls it an employment agreement, an employment agreement, corporate opportunity agreement, or an intellectual property agreement, the same result follows. He also claims in his brief that this is something for which it was outside his normal job duties. That, again, is a distinction without a difference. The issue isn't whether it relates to his job duties. It's whether it relates to Motorola's business, and unquestionably it did. Again, this is something that Motorola anticipated. Motorola has done business in Russia for decades, and probably will for decades. This simply relates to the growth of that.
If Motorola survives for decades.
Let's keep our fingers crossed.
It's not for nothing that a lot of people think that Dilbert is aimed at Motorola.
Perhaps so. The next point I'd like to make, which is that even if the employment agreement does not cover this, there is insufficient evidence that Motorola obtained a benefit out of this, much less unjustly so. Vinaroff has no evidence that Edelweiss did benefit Motorola at all. He claims that it exists in tabs U and V of his summary judgment materials, and while it does demonstrate that Motorola has been doing business in Russia, there's absolutely nothing to link those activities to Project Edelweiss. He also cites the court record where it says, quote, Vinaroff refers the court to deposition testimony of several Motorola employees who confirm that the project Vinaroff described indeed was put in place in Russia. This suffers from two.
But by the way, just as a matter of collateral interest, does Edelweiss grow in Russia? Most people think of it as an Austrian flower.
I believe it is particular to the Alps. So whether it grows in Russia, I don't know. Perhaps in the Urals, I don't know. But he His argument suffers from two defects. First, it's with all due respect to the district court, it wasn't true. There was one piece of deposition testimony cited from a Mr. McCall, which is cited in the district court's opinion, and it says nothing of the sort that Edelweiss was put in place in Russia. Second, it doesn't show that Motorola ever made a dime from it in revenue, much less in profit, which he would need to establish in order to show unjust enrichment. And further, there's nothing unjust about an employer benefiting from the business-related activities of its employees. Motorola pays Mr. Vinaroff a salary. He did his job. He may claim he went above and beyond the call of duty, and perhaps he did so in developing this project. But to the extent that he exceeded expectations, there are several employees who exceed their expectations, and an unjust enrichment claim cannot lie. Otherwise, the floodgates open to a bevy of claims from what I call high-performing employees. He claims that what's unjust here is that he was led to believe that he would be paid considerably if Motorola benefited from this, and that he would receive anywhere from 6 to 9% of Motorola's revenues, not profits, but revenues on this project. There are two problems with this argument. One is that he doesn't even claim he was ever promised anything he claims he was led to believe. There's no contract here that was ever consummated about paying him this this sort of commission, I would call it. Second, what he's really making in that context is a claim for promissory estoppel, and that claim was waived. It was never made at the district court, not in the pleadings and not in the summary judgment briefings, and he cannot raise that now. So unless the court has further questions, I would ask that the court affirm the judgment of the district court that the unjust enrichment claim fails as a matter of law. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything further, Mr. Adamski?
Unless the court has questions for me, no.
All right, thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement. Our fourth case.